WAER Sports proudly presents the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
Goalpost goes down for just the seventh time in program history. Syracuse football has secured a top 10 win in the Dome.
Freeman straight away elevates and slams. Ladies and gentlemen, Donnie Freeman is here in the 315.
And it's misery at the hands of Maryland. Syracuse with its closest shot at a championship in over a decade gets sent home.
Hearing from a host of guests.
Super excited to welcome back onto the podcast the voice of Syracuse men's lacrosse, Tim Leonard.
Now Jason Benetti, voice of the Detroit Tigers.
And providing all the hot takes.
If Syracuse beats Miami, there are no questions. This program is headed in the right direction. Fran Brown is the leader of the future.
These are guys that can make impacts on day one. You're going to see that presence. That just when Syracuse in the past, when you look at their offensive line and defensive line, they were undersized in committing penalties. Now, they might still commit penalties. Who knows? But at least you know they're not going to be undersized.
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast, and it starts right now.
Welcome in to the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. Another week, Syracuse men's lacrosse still alive in the NCAA tournament. Wow, I mean, you know, third time's the charm, whatever you want to say, Syracuse gets it done. It was a crazy game, I would say. 13-11, Syracuse takes down North Carolina. The quarterfinals advance back to championship weekend for the second year in a row. You know, as before we get into that, let's start with the weather, of course. You know, last time I think I was complaining was because it was not hot and it was still miserable. Now we got like 90 degree weather for like 4 days in a row and it was ridiculous. But now it's back to like a calm like 65 and 70 here. Is it still like ridiculous in Burlington?
Yeah, it was 94 today and we were outside most of the day, so it was hot, but man, it's fun. Like I enjoy being outside, and it definitely feels a lot better than 20 degrees. Although I will say 65, 70, that's like the hot spot. I feel like if you could live in any temperature in between 65 and 70 year round, is like that's like ideal conditions.
For sure.
Light breeze, 65 degrees.
That's how it is. It looks like it's going to be a little chilly and maybe some rain down in Charlottesville. We got Rick Beardsley on the pod to talk about, you know, Syracuse's season, the tournament as a whole, previewing Notre Dame, recapping UNC. We talked some women's lacrosse. We talked some future recruiting on the woman's side. You know, stay tuned for that interview. One of, you know, our favorite guests every year. Another long one. So plenty of Rick Beardsley and myself to, you know, stay tuned for that. We did touch on the weather, which is kind of why I mentioned it. Maybe it'll help Syracuse, but you'll have to listen to that to find out. Any like big takeaways from that North Carolina game? Obviously, I guess the three things that we talked about before was John Mullen, Jimmy McCool, and Joey. I think those were the.
Well, I mean, if you look at Syracuse, yeah, but I think if you look at the fact that we basically predicted the game.
Sure.
It was going to come, especially the Syracuse side. Well, like we talked about how Syracuse needed to win the faceoff battle, which they did. Mullen was fantastic. I think he's really coming into himself. He was 13-24, but it was really about like the draws at the start and then the draws towards the end of the game. Like he needed to win to, you know, keep them in it in the first half. And then he needed to win when they needed to close it out. And that's what he did. So that was one. And then we talked about McCool, and McCool was solid once again. He was over 50%, which on the other side, I don't think Kent Goode was very competitive at all. I think that he allowed 8 straight Syracuse shots as goals on that long run that Syracuse had. And, you know, that was kind of a question mark we had. We were like, is this really what they're going to do? They're going to, you know, play out this entire season and make a change and they're just going to stick with it. And honestly, I don't know. I don't know if Coach Bresci made the right call here. I mean, you have a guy who makes his first career start in round one of the NCAA tournament, and then you just throw him out there against a hungry Syracuse team that had already lost twice. For me, it just didn't feel like it was the right move. And then we touched on Duffy, and he was clearly not 100%. I think they showed him during the broadcast several times on that exercise bike. He did end up scoring a pretty big goal for North Carolina down the stretch, but at the end of the day, it was another time where, similar to the ACC tournament, Syracuse was able to neutralize UNC's offense. Dom Petromala didn't score until 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter. And by then, Syracuse had kind of erased that deficit, crawled out of that hole, and they did everything they needed to do to win. This was a, if we're going to say, if in my opinion, if we rank, the three games against UNC, obviously the win is the best, but they struggled when they were trying to make changes in that second game. It almost felt like a step back. So this was a noticeable step forward. I think this might have been the most complete game they've played since Georgetown, Virginia. I mean, they really hadn't played this dominant since that game.
And against those teams, like you could tell Syracuse was just the better team. This was a game where you had two pretty evenly strength teams. Granted, UNC, minus their best player, healthy, I guess you could say. But Syracuse looks complete. All phases of the game. You can harp on the turnovers a little bit, but just the way kind of the game played out. UNC committed a bunch of turnovers there. The first quarter was just pretty horrendous
It was
lacrosse.
awful to watch and listen to. My
Mullen
goodness.
was 6 for 6. McCool was, near perfect, and Syracuse scored one goal. Like Syracuse could have been up 5, 6 goals at the end of that first quarter had they played a little better, shot a little better. So that'll be interesting. Obviously, Syracuse now plays Notre Dame. That is Saturday. This will hopefully get posted Thursday morning. Syracuse plays Notre Dame 2:30 game time, 2 o'clock McClure Green Modeling countdown to face off. Second time Syracuse plays the Irish this season. The first time obviously did not go Syracuse's direction. That was in South
South
Bend.
Bend.
Yep, in South Bend. So, you were at that game, right?
I was at that game.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, the most important thing, and it'll be constant in this matchup as well, is going to be Spelina versus Sean Light. That's going to be where the matchup is won. And we saw in the first half, Spelina beat Light a few times. I think he had a hat trick at halftime, at least 2 goals. I think he had 4 points at the break. And then second half, Light just completely neutralized him. And he talked about it after the game. They were a little bit slower to slide. They didn't want to, convert too quickly. And it worked because, Syracuse saw that. I think they were up 1 goal at halftime, just completely dissipate in the second half. And Notre Dame had a 5-goal win, a game that did not feel like a 5-goal Notre Dame win. I mean,
No.
McCool was getting peppered all game long, but it really felt like it was a 1 or 2 goal game throughout.
And it
It was very
was.
back and forth. It's unfortunate that that's what that result was, because I really felt like they played like the better team in that first half. And, we really didn't get to see a complete 60 minutes there. Do we see it? Do we see it this week? I don't know.
It'll be tough. I really think Syracuse can hang the way that they're playing. They play like they did on Saturday, against North Carolina. I would say
Tough to beat
Syracuse
them.
wins that game.
Tough to beat them.
It'll be interesting. We'll have coverage next week of, recapping that game. It'll be a good one. And obviously, they win Saturday. They'll play the winner of Duke and Princeton, which,
What a great matchup. What a
yeah.
fantastic matchup.
I would say both games are this is a very good championship weekend slate. Monday would be the national championship if Syracuse wins. Maybe we'll even get a Sunday pod going if they win on Saturday. Who knows? It'll be plenty of lacrosse action here.
I feel like since this is being played at Virginia and there has been some news, I feel like we have to touch on
Oh yeah,
it.
we will. Our good friend of the program, former coach of Virginia men's lacrosse, Lars Tiffany, will not have his contract renewed with the Cavaliers after, I think, a decade there. He won
Natties.
two national championships back to back, because you don't count the COVID year. So
Don't
2019,
count 21.
2021, back to back national championships. Lars is done in Charlottesville, which if you told me a couple of years ago, I would have been absolutely not. Obviously, last season's Virginia did not play particularly well.
In the playoff, yeah.
This season kind of felt like it was going to be the same way. Then they turn it around, win the ACC championship, beat Notre Dame twice in a season, which is, impressive.
Only two
And
losses.
yeah. And so like the thing is, it's a tough world we live in.
It's
And
tough because it makes sense if you look at the fact that they were going to miss the playoffs for a second straight year. Like, if you look at the fact that where their season was, it would have made sense. But then they have this whole turnaround. They put on 2 weeks of great lacrosse. They win the ACC by 10 goals. And, everyone's like, oh, UVA's back. They're a national contender. And then kind of get upset in the first round there by Georgetown. I thought that was a more evenly matched game than people were saying. People were saying UVA is going to do this, but I mean, props to Georgetown. They really didn't flinch. And I guess just the way it goes, I would be shocked if he doesn't have another job next year, though. I think he'll probably be a very hot name on the market, and wherever he ends up will definitely obtain some good talent. I think it's going to be hard to keep Lars down.
I agree. I maybe we'll find out if Lars really wants to go into back into coaching. Who knows? As frequent listeners of the Ostrom Pod know, Lars is a very awesome guy, and sometimes he has interests that come outside the game of lacrosse. So who knows? I saw something on Twitter. Someone posted was like, "All right, SMU's gonna bring in lacrosse. Let's bring in Lars Tiffany." And I was like, "Huh, that would be interesting." I can't really see Lars ever going to Texas, but I
No.
mean, who knows? He went to Charlottesville, which is kind of remote.
Yeah.
So, very interesting. Sad for Coach Tiffany, of course, and we hope he gets back on his feet. Well, I don't even want to go into the depths of that story because we could be here for an hour debating on whose decision it was and if any players, parental figures, ex-players, whatever. That's we've seen a couple people not want to comment, specifically Kevin Corrigan. Anish Shroff was asked about it earlier today, and he said, I've heard some things, but I'll let people decide on their own. So it's
Yeah.
definitely an interesting
It's a
scenario
crowded
going
topic
on.
right now. There's a lot of theories, none that we
Lots.
need to get into, but it's definitely interesting. And
Yeah.
I was a little shook. I didn't expect it, so.
I wasn't shocking, the whole discourse the week before about his agent saying, no, everything's good. And then, all I'm going to say is I hope whatever happened comes out so that we can talk about it and figure out what happened. I know we'll never know if it's the truth or anything, but this is kind of the fun storyline of lacrosse that we don't get too often in this sport, which is pretty, cut and dry every once in a while. So I guess that's it for basketball, for lacrosse. Just make sure to tune into our broadcast Saturday of the Final Four, and then Syracuse wins. That game will be Monday at 1. So McClure Remodeling Countdown to Face Off, if it happens, will be at 12:30. Once again, I'll be on the double overtime for Saturday's game, going up until 6:30. So make sure to tune into that as well. Will be a fun discourse with Nick Evans. And then we got some Syracuse football and basketball news. Yesterday, Syracuse picked up a commitment from Iker Martinez, 7-foot center from Mexico. Freshman will be a freshman class of 2026. His offer sheet wasn't too impressive. Just I think he'll be one of the last pieces, maybe the last piece that Syracuse gets. I don't think he'll play. I don't think Syracuse can really expect anything from him. He has a couple of highlight clips on his Twitter, but I guess you can't really argue about Syracuse getting a 7-foot guy with, I guess 4 years, maybe 4 or 5 years, depending on the ruling of eligibility. If he doesn't move the needle, I don't
Or
really
if you're
care.
LSU, or if you're LSU, you get four schools, you get drafted, you can go play
Get traded.
overseas for a couple of years. You can get traded a couple times, and then you can find your way back on LSU.
I mean, the thing, I don't want to get into this too much, but Jahan Madar was a 2020 second round pick. Dude, I mean, as I grew up as a Boston Celtics fan, and I remember when the Celtics drafted him, and
Yep.
the discourse was, oh, 2 years.
Wow.
He'll be ready in 2 years. Yeah, just give it 2 years,
And
2020.
he's gonna be playing college basketball in the year 2027. Like, just
And
absolutely
he
absurd.
got drafted in 2020, folks. All right, but that's enough on that conversation. We could have our own
Absurd.
opinions on Will Wade. Syracuse added another game to its basketball schedule. Rutgers in the Barclays Center, reported by John Rothstein, not confirmed, as none of their games are really confirmed to this point. But it's an interesting game. I think Rutgers is probably one of the power conference teams you would have a good feeling about beating. So maybe that's why Syracuse would put that game on its schedule.
You
Barclays,
think?
they've played a couple games in Barclays the past couple of years. Texas Tech, and what was the other game that was there? I don't know. It's on the tip of my tongue. But Texas Tech, I know they played. That was last year. 2 years
Two
ago,
years ago?
2 years ago, I
Yeah.
remember because Carmelo was in attendance for that one. To go with another, so that's another NBA stadium that Syracuse will be playing in. So that's interesting. Football, Syracuse just got a tight end commitment over Alabama and Kentucky. Auburn was also in the mix from Maryland. So, you know, just some more off-season recruiting business. I've seen Fran Brown posting on his Instagram. He's in LA meeting up with Scott Hansen. He's in Jacksonville doing some work with Tom Coughlin's charity. So Fran Brown, busy guy, Syracuse football recruiting all over the place, making connections, building the SU football brand back. But now it's time. What all you've been waiting for, the illustrious 40 to 45 minute conversation with four-time All-American Rick Beardsley, one of our favorite guests on the Ostrom Avenue podcast. I sat down with him talking all things lacrosse, SU lacrosse, both on the men's and women's side. It's a great interview. So now we'll send it over to that. Now I have the pleasure of being joined again, fifth time on the Ostrom Avenue podcast, same amount of times as Duke men's lacrosse head coach John Donowski, who's still alive in the tournament, four-time All-American SU defenseman Rick Beardsley. Rick, thanks so much for taking the time again. Really appreciate it.
As always, Griff, obviously one of my favorite things to be on and to be amongst those types of guys like Coach Donowski, who, by the way, recruited me back in the 90s when he was at Hofstra. And believe it or not, it came down to Hofstra and Syracuse for me. And people like, there was no comparison lacrosse-wise in a way, but Hofstra was like another world. It was over a bridge. It had hot women. So like, but I chose Syracuse where I obviously now reside. So Coach Donowski, great job getting in. I'm down here in Darien coaching, and I see one of the guys who's a Duke alumnus, and I said, hey, they're going to get in. He's like, they're not getting in. I'm like, they're going to get in, and they're going to be tough because they're talented. And lo and behold, boy, Richmond wasn't happy about that draw in the first round. I wouldn't have been if I was Dan Chamati, but nonetheless, not taking anything away from Richmond. They were a spectacular team, had a great year. And, that's just how lacrosse is these days. There's so much talent, so much parity, and anybody can win on any given day.
Yeah, I mean, a big difference from UNC playing New Albany, and then if Richmond got that draw, who knows what would have happened. I guess let's talk about the first two rounds of the tournament. And any surprises? Is there anything that I guess stuck out to you, and how
Duke's
those?
Duke, obviously, we could talk about that. I mean, listen, I used to always say, and I used to catch crap from it from Ronnie Caputo, and he'll probably listen to this too. I used to say on radio, Duke was the best spot, where great players went to become mediocre. I used to say that constantly. And then he called me out one day. So now I got to be nice. So Ronnie, great job. But no, that to me was really not a huge surprise, but like them getting in, obviously it gets earned by having an ACC schedule. That's what the Atlantic Coast Conference gives you for being in it. Right. So let's be frank, when Syracuse football and basketball, when basketball entered, I remember Coach Boeheim saying, is it really an advantage that this needs to happen? Right. Cause the Big East was the creme de la creme of college basketball. You know, for lacrosse, the ACC has become, you know, the Big Ten. And I, in like football, you know, I mean, everybody says that the SEC is the SEC. The Big Ten's won more national championships, had more bowl games and all that in football. So being in the ACC for schools like Duke, Notre Dame, Syracuse, you get battle tested. And for that, you get rewarded. And you get rewarded. And now look at Duke. They're in for a Final Four. And man, that's going to be one hell of a game. I mean, one hell of a game. The other surprise for me was Carolina absolutely tattooing Albany. I mean, that was an absolute beatdown. And I didn't see that coming, even though, you know, man for man, Albany is a New York State school, doesn't get many five stars, but they always will compete. You know, Scott Maher, who's a close personal friend of mine, who's the head coach at Albany, he's been there forever, he's a Yorktown guy like myself. They've always competed. But that game was, you know, kind of a blowout. And that will just show you at times when, you know, where you can recruit and who has money and who doesn't. And I think that those two are the biggest surprises for me in the tournament. The rest is, you know, guys get in. Like I was saying all year, I said in the beginning, it's like when people started beating each other, was it because that was a real disconnect of players, or players all not bad? Are they good? Or I was talking with a buddy of mine, Chris Saran, who just won a state championship in the big schools down in Dallas, Texas at Dallas Jesuit. Congrats, Chris. He was my college goalie. And we were talking about like exactly what I just mentioned. You have a Syracuse All-American along with several All-Americans living in Texas that played at different programs, running lacrosse programs. So now Texas has had great coaching, right? Mike Pressler's had Highland Park. I mean, there's an incredible amount of guys. And then on California, you know, the amount of coaching. I mean, the best club lacrosse team in the 2020-27 group in club right now is the West Coast Stars, they say, right? They won the club championship. And they're loaded. And that's on the West Coast. You know, just so much parity because of guys moving. Heck, I talked to my buddy Mikey Cap down in Alabama. Alabama's starting to put out guys. Tulsa, Oklahoma, starting to put out guys. But that parity is something that, you know, that's what really surprises me, right? It isn't more of like the blowouts or Duke getting in, I guess. It's how even teams could be, how tight the tournament has become. And that brings up the question, you know, Griff, do they expand the teams? You know, the NCAA is the king of doing too much, right? We all know that, right? And sometimes too much is not good. But you know, what do we do? But that's really my biggest surprise is the parity that was in that and how tight it was to get in.
I mean, we've talked about the ACC and have three of the four teams making championship weekend, being in the conference. What does it say about, you know, the strength? And, you know, there's been talk about SMU potentially coming up and making a team. You've mentioned Texas. What would that do to the ACC and the strength of the conference?
Well, I think that would 100% grow the game in the best way possible. So if I'm the NCAA, I'm actually feeding money to those programs to start. I really am. I'm trying to find a way to get a grant to give them like $6-7 million just to get everything they need. And then when they settle in with their own budgets, you figure it out. That will expand the game tremendously, especially in a state like Texas, where they're putting out some great teams and some great players. It was kind of like, Griff, you're from Jersey, right? So
I'm from Mass,
but sure. Who's the other guy's a Jersey guy, right? Who was on this?
Yeah, Jordan.
Jordan. So like, it was like New Jersey a bunch of years ago, right? When I was in college, when I was your age, the best midfielder in New Jersey was like a third line middie at Maryland. Then all of a sudden, 5 years later, they have Twarton Trophy winners. It's what happens when you get good coaching combined with kids who want to do it and parents who had a love for it. So going to Texas would be just like it did when it went to Stanford and it went to USC, right? Stanford, look at Stanford. They were one game away from the Final Four. They were ranked number one in the country at one point. And that's their program is 8 years old, maybe, I think, or 5 years old. So like you have to figure that that type of thing can happen because where there's a will, there's a way, and where there's money and big athletic programs, the athletes will follow. And SMU or Texas, I mean, one of my captain's brothers is the starting goalie at Texas on the club team. He's an easily Division I level goalie. He just didn't want to go to the Division I schools that were recruiting him. He wanted to go to a big college. Hence, that's what's going on in club. That's why club gets played and put on ESPN all the time.
Yeah, since we've last talked, Syracuse has gone on some ups, had some downs, was ranked number one in the country, and now made it to the NCAA tournament. First game against Yale was probably one of the more classic Syracuse games. You go up, you go down, and make it close, one goal game. What was the I guess one of the main takeaways from you about how, Syracuse can play a close game against a team that, you're supposed to win against, but still come away and battle some adversity.
Well, there's a few things, right? Number one, experience. A lot of seniors. They've been there. Those kids come from winning programs in high school. As my buddy Pat Jackson always says from Greenwich Warriors, a good buddy of mine, he's like, people want winners. If you're a winner, you're a winner. And, they've won the majority of their games their entire lives. So they understand how to win. They've understand how to come back, and handle adversity in athletics. I think another thing that really is a big part of it is strength of schedule. They play the best and they take beatings, so you're going to be in those games. I mean, look at Yale, right? Yale's team speed at the midfield was what stuck out to me. Their team speed was freakish and they were shooting real well. And then they just had a goalie who just fell to the coldness in the third quarter. And Syracuse, what was alarming to me in that game for Syracuse was they won 80%, 70% of the faceoffs or more, I believe, and shot 80% in like the third quarter, but still gave up a lot of goals. And that come playoff time can really hurt you because these teams will start to capitalize a little more. But Yale, there's nothing to take away from Yale except that those were young kids at the end of the year. They're not young kids anymore. They're seasoned veterans. And Syracuse just got in a battle. And when you give people life and confidence, I equate it to, when you went out when you're single, right? You go out to the bars. When you're fat, you don't have nice clothes on. You don't feel good about yourself talking to a lady, right? When you're in shape, you're tan, you're feeling good about yourself. That machismo and that confidence, hey man, that does a lot. And that in an athlete's that mental side, Syracuse has that mental side. They've been battle tested. And, people complain about Gary Gate, how he doesn't get emotional. It's like, I saw a post on Facebook this morning. Is he even there? And, I hate to break it to you. That way works when you're in a tight game. They just see calm and solitude. They don't see a guy frantic. That was one thing I've learned being a coach, right? If they see you panic, they're going to panic. If they see you calm, they'll be calm. I mean, that's just a way. And Syracuse just has seniors and experience. And that's what they have on everybody here right now in the Final Four.
When we talked before the season, one of the biggest strengths was going to be John Mullen at the faceoff. And as much as you can say about this season, he's had his ups, he's for sure had his downs, but in the best two games that he's played this season have come against Yale and against North Carolina. For someone like him, how important was it to see that, yeah, he can be very good, and especially it being against one of the best face-off guys in the country, Brady Wambach?
Well, in this day and age, face-off guys mean so much. And, I've been on the opposite end of it as a coach, the opposite end of it, in games where you wish you had a face-off guy of that caliber. And then, Yeah, but one thing I don't think I've really ever said is you need to change the rules. And I see these people post and talk about one person has too much power over the game. Well, then that's like saying, you know, Gary Gates should have never been able to play lacrosse because he had a lot going on for himself there, right? Mikey Powell should have never been allowed to play lacrosse, right? So Johnny Mullins, I mean, first of all, I'm trying to the movie. It'll come to me. He looks like one of those aliens that was jacked. You know the one I'm talking about, where the spaceship comes down and they, God.
Is it?
Oh, I wish I could pill it. He has like that look and that stone look. And, you know, from what I know of that young man, he is 100% what he shows, meaning he is intense. He takes it real serious. He's solid about his fitness. You know, he doesn't go out like the typical, you know, college student goes out and tries to enjoy themselves on a Friday or Saturday night. And you know, he's all business, that kid. And he's the one who's given them a fight. I mean, that the North Carolina game was the, I've been on radio before 1,000 times about that game. And that was my biggest concern was could they go 50-50 at the faceoff X? And he certainly did his part. And for that, he was rewarded. I mean, obviously, everybody complains about in that game, Billy Dwan stepping on the line, and he did. Let's be honest. Let's speak the truth between us. He did, and that resulted in a goal. But that's, you know, human error, right? That's why you play the game. That's why you have referees, and that's been the case for the last 100 years. So, you know, there were a lot of things in that game that could have went differently. But Johnny Mullen was a massive factor in why Syracuse came away beating a team. Honestly, I don't care what they say. Like, it's hard to beat a team 3 times. That's a good team that they beat. And I don't think Syracuse did anything out of the ordinary compared to what they did before. They just kind of stayed the course. But that game was an excellent game and a really good victory moving into, you know, playing what is going to be a really, really good Notre Dame team.
Yeah, another guy that had a great game, obviously, Joey. He likes the quarterfinals matchups on Long Island. You know, struggled against North Carolina in the regular season. No goals, no points. And then the ACC championship.
Listen, I'm going to speak the truth between us, man. Like, you know, I'm an opponent and a proponent of certain things in life, but that kid can shoot. If you leave his hands free, he hits a million different spots. That comes from probably all the work that kid's done by himself and that box lacrosse background. I mean, he really is a good shooter. I'm trying to understand why D coordinators, obviously it's easier said than done, right? Let him get to that wing, you know. I mean, you might as well drape all over him, beat him up, hack him, make him play with pressure on himself, you know, like getting pressure to see if he can do that. But if you leave his hands free, like the one where he came up the wing to North Carolina short, it was on him, he just patiently waited, saw a screen, put it in the low elbow. Like, how does that short stick D-mitty not know to put hands on him? That kid's killed the entire country from that wing spot all year long, right? All year long. And then you couple that, man, like Finn Thompson. Let's be honest. That kid couldn't hit the broadside of a barn when he first got here. But, oh, my goodness, he's as money as anyone. He's in that Owen Hiltz but writing type of money. Owen Hiltz shooting percentage, you know, his senior year had to be well over 50%. And, you know, the average for all 53 or 52 teams now in Division I is 28.6%. That's what their shooting percentage is. And if you shoot at that, you're considered a good lacrosse player or maybe an average lacrosse player. But, like, I don't see those guys, like, number 22 or number 23 being 50% guys. They got to be in the 60s with their shooting percentage, especially when left alone. You know, a lot of guys miss step downs. Those two don't.
That goal to put them up 3 in the fourth quarter, that was one of the crazier goals that I've seen. And then obviously getting production You've seen at times you maybe get production of three of the four seniors, Leo, Roa, Thompson, Splint. You got production from all of them against North Carolina, and that's going to be important going forward. Obviously, Saturday, Syracuse plays very good Notre Dame squad. Sean Light, Tuataha nominee, maybe becomes the first defenseman to win it. He's given Syracuse some issues, and what is it about him that makes it so difficult for opposing teams?
Well, listen, Griff, let's speak reality. Your dad's an NFL, right? Cornerback. Your mom was a college athlete. You're probably going to be pretty good as an athlete, right? Number one. So the kid is blessed with size, speed, and intelligence. He was very well coached at Seton Hall Prep in New Jersey, both by Ross Turco and his crew, and then John Sveck, who took over the old Brown assistant coach, was the D coordinator. So he got some pretty good coaching along the way. And he's certainly probably with one of the best coaches in the country, in Ryan Wellner, the defensive coordinator at Notre Dame. Why Ryan Wellner's name is not up for a million Division I jobs that are open now will be beyond me, because that guy is one hell of a coach. But Sean Light, athletically, he's a freak, physically a freak. Skill-wise, he's as good as anyone skill-wise. He really has not many chinks in his armor. But Joey Spoelstra matches up pretty well against him. Light is aggressive to a point and not aggressive. I've seen him where he plays more aggressive on a guy and then sits back. I don't know what he'll be in this game. I'm not trying to give up any secrets. I did get a text Sunday morning of this previous week from Ryan Wellner, the defensive coordinator at Notre Dame, asking some things on a Sunday morning after the Final Four. I'm very fortunate to be friends with guys like that and get to talk to them and learn a little bit about what they do and vice versa. I don't know if I'm giving them any wisdom as much as I could always get wisdom from them. But Sean Light, he should be the defenseman of the year. Should be no doubt about that. And he's, you know, it's going to be interesting how Syracuse uses that matchup. It's going to be interesting also how Notre Dame, does Notre Dame press Joey Spoelstra behind the goal a lot? Or they let him come to him? So it's kind of going to be a chess match. I know you can't throw zone against Syracuse. They'll kill you, even with that level of of players. But Notre Dame, gives a little bit of a matchup, nightmare in the middle of the field for Syracuse. But, the other thing is Notre Dame's been there. These guys on that team have two national championships. They're looking for their third. Very fortunate. There's a kid on there, in broadcasting, Dick Vitale. His grandson Ryan is on that Notre Dame team. He's a senior and he's already got two titles. I mean, those kids know what it's like to win. And that's something you can't teach. That's something that is literally like you do it and you win, right? Like, I remember my first national championship. I was just a 19-year-old kid and playing in front of this big crowd. And the only thing I had to get over was, I played in front of bigger venues and the dome. That was the thing that helped me a ton. Because when you played in the Carrier Dome, no other venue really intimidates you. And, these guys, that, and then, so when you get into the Final Four, and then you get into Bird Stadium, you're not intimidated by stuff like that. That's hence why we won some titles. I think guys were just used to it, just like the Syracuse guys are now. But Sean Light, to go back to that, is a great defender, one of the best one-on-one cover guys in America. And that'll be one hell of a matchup.
Syracuse coming off a game where they had season high 19 turnovers. You mentioned, Notre Dame's a very strong team, coached defensively as well. Is that something you're worried about given, how Syracuse fared in the regular season?
No, like, dude, you just play. That's how it works. I don't know what people like, again, Griff played it, been an analyst in games, probably the realest analyst I think the ACC network ever has had. Meaning, like, I just be like, that kid stinks. That was a terrible shot, you know. And at times that's right, and at times that's wrong. But when long push comes to shove, it's who's ready to play, who's focused, who's willing to lay it on the line, and who, you know, and who's willing to dig down deep when the nerves set in. Because no matter how great you are, nerves set in on every athlete. You know, everyone who has machismo. And I can only speak for myself. I was a really confident human when I was on a field, but I got really confident when my teammates around me were doing such great things. You know, it almost upped your game. And all these teams are upping their games now. And that's really going to be the biggest difference is who can up it higher. You know, that's really going to be the big difference in all two of those games and in the national championship.
It's, you know, it's going to be interesting because against North Carolina, Syracuse primarily stuck to its top midfield line, and something that I guess Syracuse can do considering, you know, their experience. But
What's the
if
forecast?
I last time I saw it was maybe going to be a little rainy.
Let's see, forecast. I can look that up. Keep talking. Keep asking the question.
And so, you know, given that Syracuse, you know, has relied on its top midfield line. They have obviously McEntee, McCarthy, Hahn.
Holy right. 53 degrees.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe
Holy shnikey. Could be the coldest Final Four on record.
given that Syracuse has relied on its top midfield line a lot, and you know, they have some youth, but also some guys with a little bit experience, given the 2 games in 3 days possibility, you know, how do you see that playing a factor in, you know, at times where you might have to go to the second midfield line, given that you don't want to wear these guys out too much?
Well, like I said earlier, right? You know, you're not a freshman at the end of your freshman year. And you've obviously played against pretty good talent on a daily basis. You know, I was one of those guys, right? Started as a freshman. By the end of my freshman year, I don't know if I was a freshman, but every day in practice, I battled first team All-Americans. And I had a hell of a battle every single day in practice. So sometimes, you know, yeah, it's a game, and you have that game atmosphere and whatever. I'll be honest, man. Sometimes, like, practice is harder than a game. And it might be in this instance, you know, they may go in the same time a second midfield goes in, or a fourth D middie, you know what I mean? Or a second pole. But the good thing is because we checked the weather forecast, because we're good like that, you know, it's going to be 53 and rainy. Now, this is the other thing. Is UVA grass?
Yeah.
Okay. That can be an issue. They stopped playing on grass a couple of years ago, I remember, in Final Fours because they were afraid it was going to tear up the fields too much. And Syracuse plays the second game, correct?
Yes.
So that field can play a lot into things going on. Because if there's torrential rain and that field doesn't drain well, or they allow people on it at all, and they're getting 90 degrees and sunny, if they haven't been watering the hell out of that thing to let it grow, then cut it the day before the game, you know, you could have some issues with the field, and that can play a factor. Listen, footing plays a factor in a lot of things. Now, the whole BS thing about like Hofstra's field was slippery, that's no excuse. That's a dry field. How the hell you slip? Don't blame it all though. The new field, it's slippery. Come on, man. Like, these people are nuts. But rain and wet grass is another different animal, right? So that could play a difference. But these second midfield guys, they're good. They're five-star kids. By the way, families were all guys who've played in those games. So you have wisdom. Those kids, you know, inherently know how to handle it probably. You know, my kids, my wife's won 2 world championships and two Pan Am game gold medals, and I've got national championships and she's got 4 of them. And you know, our kids, man, you know, I know Angela's out hurt, but you know, I don't think they'll be intimidated by a Final Four. They like been around people like us, kind of just letting them know how it is. You know, like, you know, you're the Spallina boys, having a dad that's been in it. Right, Billy Dwan, the third, having a dad that's been in it. You know, the McAtee, I mean, you know, Han's dad, I guarded, for Christ's sakes. I guarded the kid, the guy. He was my assignment at Maryland in a national championship. And the mom has four national championships. You know that, right? Like, did you know that about his family? And then the sister, second team All-American at Florida. Like, these kids are going to be great. That second midfield's going to do awesome. I mean, Carolina ran a second midfield. It was full of five stars. They did a pretty good job. Maybe if you get a couple goals out of these guys, probably help the cause.
Yeah, that definitely would. We haven't really talked too much about SU's defense. Obviously, North Carolina, one of the best offenses in the country. Jordan Beck did a very good job with Don Petromalo, Riley Figueroa, second team All-American. You know, we've talked about seeing if he can get the respect that he deserves. And, you know,
yeah, how did he get nothing in the ACC, but yet is a second team All-American? What's wrong with that picture? I mean, listen, I'm not a smart man. I got an 800 on my SATs. Okay. So you're not talking to Albert Einstein over here, but I'm just curious, folks. That's someone people should look up. Like, how does a guy not get all ACC first or second team, but yet in the grand scheme of things is amongst the top six defenders in the position in the country? Very interesting, because that kid gets a lot of non-credit. And that's the only way to say, you know, when they say people get lack of credit? No, the only way to emphasize, like, he gets a lot of non-credit. And that's bullshit, right? That kid's good and marks up everybody's one. And he was number one in the ACC and caused turnovers, correct? He was, right, second team All-American. Like, the kid quietly does a great job, and then they shit on him in the ACC like that? Come on, people. What are you doing? I mean, and he's a very nice young man. And that defense is excellent. Billy Dwan, you know, his range, his speed, the things he does. God, I hope if he gets one more point, I think he ties me for second most all-time in points. We wish that he does, but then we wish that he doesn't. You know what I'm saying? You know, I've known his family since I was a little kid. You know, his dad, you know, his uncle is the associate head coach at Loyola. Was a second baseman on my little league team. Same grad year, just different high school in the same town. And then, you know, listen, in between the pipes, man, come on, Jimmy McCool. Huge saves down the line, especially against Yale. I mean, that was the right reverse backhand around the world. That was a sick save. Jimmy McCool's been excellent, you know, in the pipes, and he's the one that's really helped a lot. The biggest thing that, you know, I see could be an issue has been the defensive midfield unit. But as far as against Carolina, those guys locked it down really well. You know, so it's just – They're doing a great job, and you know what they say: offense wins games, and defense wins championships.
Yeah, I mean, I was just about to get to McCool. Obviously, first half against Yale, little rough. Second half was very good in that fourth quarter stretch, and then obviously North Carolina played spectacularly. You know, if there's one thing that Syracuse needs to do or has to do to beat this Notre Dame team, if there's one thing that's going to make the difference, what do you expect it to be?
They score more goals. No, I had to do that to you, Griff. You're like, you know, you're a serious like Newhouse kid that's going to be like, you know, like on ABC and be gonna look back and be like, do you remember when you had that schmuck Rick Beardsley on? Is he alive still? Where is that guy? Hey, look at him. Is he still look like he's got 15 chins? You know, like. No, I think they just need to control the middle of the field. I think possessions, you know, everybody can say the same thing. Oh, they got to win faceoffs. They got to have great goaltending. And, you know, I think that they have to have good quality shots. I think that they got to control the middle of the field. I think, honestly, you talked about turnovers, 20 turnovers. Between you and I don't hold that into a massive, like, stat that everybody else does, because the other team might have had 19. Could have just been the way that game was, right? So, like, people put so much focus. The stat that tells all to me is ground balls. That's called possession, right? Those are possessions. Those are what my high school coach called a two-goal swing. Got a chance to score a goal, got a chance to get scored on. Two goal swing. Makes no sense to me, but that's what he used to say, and the dude's in the Hall of Fame, so I'm going to trust him. But that is the big thing. I think he who controls the middle of the field in this game is the team that wins.
Now let's move on to the women's side. You know, we've talked our fair share of men's lacrosse playing Saturday.
Why are you smiling? What's going on? You guys smirk.
No, I know you're passionate, and you know the women's squad under Coach.
I love it. Yeah, I'm a massive, and I've turned all the guys that were 93 guys on our chat with Reggie. So I have a chat. It's called the guys who won it in 93, and I started it, and it's as many guys as I can have their cells for, and the guys are all in on it. Like when you get a text from Roy Colsey, who has three sons, and says, "I'm all in on SU women's lacrosse," like games in two minutes, like can't wait. I mean, and I'm lucky because Roy was my college roommate, one of my best friends growing up. Like my oldest daughter Angela and him have a really good relationship. So you know, she was down at UVA, and you know, he was there, and you know, the pictures and the hugs, and it gives me goosebumps because like I love his three sons. I'm playing against his youngest tonight. We play Ridgefield. It's like, I got to stop another Colsey. Jesus, like, this kid is so good. Chris Colsey going to Carolina. But, like, on the women's side, you know, what can I say? You know, Coach Reggie, Coach Maggie, you know, Coach DeFelice, Coach Levy, those four have all done a spectacular job. And, you know, you're doing it with others. And you know what? Kudos real quick, Griff. To the senior class, they had three coaches, Gary Gate, Kayla Trainer, and this staff here. That's kudos to them. Some of them been there that long, right? So, you know, that's hard to do. And they stepped into it, talk about strength of schedule in the ACC. And, you know, to lose the way they did, you know, that sucked. Let's be honest. Like, as a parent, I talked earlier about, you know, our daughter, Angela. My wife and I have been in, you know, obviously in national championships and you know, those types of arenas and places. And it's just, you want them to experience what you have seen before, but they've done an awesome job. I know a lot about it, obviously. I have another one about to go through the process in Viviana. So, you know, we hope that, you know, Viviana's recruiting journey is as good as Angela's was. And it doesn't take a stop somewhere else before it gets back, you know, to Syracuse. But yeah, the women's team did an awesome job. Obviously watched every game, you know, that I could when I wasn't coaching, which was pretty much everyone. You know, I put it on the car and I'd sit there and, you know, stay in traffic or pull over to a rest area and watch the game for an hour. So yes, the women's side, I can't wait for, you know, Reggie's year two and for next year for them.
I was at that Virginia game. That was one of the cooler games to watch and just see how Syracuse's defense just was suffocating.
You know, I said it all along to Jay Alter, who I talked to this morning, actually, because he lives here in Darien. Dan Guyette, I always thought was the best goalie in the ACC, right? And she proved it. And that defense was incredible. You know, those aren't like, They look like a bunch of misfits, like 5'2", 5'4", 5'7". But, man, they're the land of misfit toys that works out really amazing. And you know, and obviously getting to know those girls and who they are. I mean, I was that dad that shoveled three times a day. Angela hurt her knee, and she lives up on top of a hill there. And I went 5 in the morning and shoveled and threw salt. I cleaned three houses of cars off every other day with all the snow we got. And those, I got to know those girls as like people and like, "Hey, Mr. Beardsley, thank you so much. Hey, Mr. Beardsley, how you doing?" Like yelling from the, like waving to me, like didn't have to do anything, get me anything except just say hello to me and be nice. And they didn't have to do that because I wasn't asking for them to, but that team is great. I love that team. And, you know, I'm looking forward to year two and into Angela's, junior year. Hopefully she's healed up and can help and contribute. But, you know, Syracuse is in good hands.
Yeah, I mean, I might, if it snows as much as it did last year, I might have to call you up and ask you to.
You're probably right down the street, Griff, right? You're on Ostrom. Are you on Ostrom Ave, seriously?
Where I'm at the court, oh, I don't know if I want to dox
Yeah, I
myself,
know.
but I'm right around there, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So, yes, if you get stuck, I'm usually the guy everybody calls anyway, because I'm the dude who knows everybody in town. I'm also the guy, as I sit up here, I'm also the guy that gets people out of lines and bars, right? You know, they're in like the long line. I know every bar owner. I kind of call them. And, Angela's never sat in a bar line, thank God. So that's the only power I have as a dad, that I can get my daughter into college bars before everybody else.
That's good to know. Obviously, with the transfer portal opening and movement, obviously some additions for Syracuse already, both on the men's and women's side, and some subtractions as well on the women's side. Caroline Trinkus being probably one of the more notable ones. How do you expect, I guess, both teams to kind of navigate the portal? Women's side, Coco Vandeveer and Emma Muchnick going to be very hard to replace, and
Yes.
obviously, the men's side, they have a list of names that they have to. How do you think both teams are gonna, go about adding and subtracting pieces?
Well, you got to look at roster limits. How is that 5-5 rule going to affect things? Number one. Number two, one of Syracuse's transfers on the women's side is Allie Hanlon. She went in, she's a goalie. There was three goalies on the Syracuse roster. So you need more than two goalies right now. You lost your 26 who went off to Penn State on a flip. And, so you got to get someone to fill in, whether it's game goalie or practice goalie, you have to have someone that can do that. Number two, on the men's side, you got to try and replace the points that are about to leave, right? If you can. Now, there's some coaches that believe in the portal, hence a Rutgers. He'd much, you know, he'll quote unquote tell you, I'd much rather get a 20-year-old man than an 18-year-old senior. So there's guys that will hit the portal. Now, the big equalizer. I don't care what anyone says. Folks, it's money. Who has NIL? Who has scholarship money? Last I heard, Syracuse doesn't have much, right? There's not much in the till here. So whatever you replace, you got to go try and find. You also have to know that coming in, everybody's like, oh, well, they're losing Spallina and they're losing Michael Leo and they're losing Dwan. And okay, well, you don't know a lot of things about how money's doled out. You don't know if maybe Billy Dwan was at, maybe he got all financial aid filed as an independent. I mean, like, who knows? Maybe Joey Spallina wasn't a full scholarship and he was getting some NIL through Gate. You know what I mean? Like, so there's so many questions to that, and money does play a factor in this now on the men's side more than it does the women's. So, they got to replace and they got to see who they have. So is the nucleus good? Is the nucleus of kids you have good enough? Yeah, midfield, yeah, everything. Who are you going to get to replace? You got some good goalies. Who are you going to get to replace all those points on offense, though? Right? So you have to go and try and get some surefire, because rookies don't usually put up points. You don't get 10 rookies that, three rookies that are going to put up 30 points each. It rarely happens. And I played with some of the greatest freshman lacrosse players that have ever played in this game, like Roy Colsey. He had like 23 goals his freshman year. That's a lot for a midfielder, even in this day and age. So, who can you grab out of the portal? And then, who can develop into something that you might have? But money's going to play it a big thing. But in the portal, Syracuse got to try and win the portal over a lot of people. The crazy amounts of people that are in the portal, like I was just looking before I got on, it's 22 kids from Iona in the portal. Like Ohio State has like 12. We got one of those, right? The kid is the attackman, right?
It's he was not nothing
Francisco.
confirmed yet. He was on campus yesterday. That's what
Oh,
I
that's
heard.
what it is. All right. It said to me that he.
Yeah, who knows?
But here's the deal. He'd be crazy not to.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think people understand that. Like, when you're a star at Syracuse, you're a star. Like, there's 7,000 people to 20,000 people a game. Like, big games, you get, everybody knows who you are. Think about it. This team's not won a national championship yet. Okay. I use the word yet. Hopefully they win it. Everybody knows who they are, aren't they? Not just in Syracuse, but around the country. Because when you're at Syracuse, just like the program, you got yourself into. People will eventually know who you are, right? Like they will, and you'll become a household name in your industry, right? And that's the same thing that happens here at Syracuse.
You mentioned your daughter, Viviana. I know she's one of the higher ranked recruits in her class. Same with Paul Carcaterra's daughter.
Number one, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, maybe some Syracuse connections down the line.
Well, you know, mom and dad, right? So Paul's wife, swimmer, Ann was a swimmer at Syracuse. We've talked about, I just called him earlier about some things like that, if you want to know the truth. But we should all be so fortunate. Yes, Viviana works real hard, and Pela is one incredible hell of a player. I got a chance to watch her against Darien, you know, because Darien women's number two team in the country. Behind Maryvale, who's loaded as well out of Maryland. And I get to see them once a week, right? So, yeah, recruiting-wise, the 28 class is a really good class across the board. So we'll see who Syracuse can get out of it. And on the women's side, and we'll see, you know, what happens with our own child, Viviana. She can make her choices. I never thought Angela Beardsley would wear a Syracuse uniform. If you want to know the truth, it was not something that she ever talked about ever. When I tell you ever, I mean, we had babysitters that were all SU lacrosse players, Coach Thorpe's daughter, Ella, you know, Alyssa Murray, and all these girls were at our house watching our kids when Tori and I would go out to dinner. And you know, how fortunate are we, right? That, you know, I have a picture of Angela with Alyssa Murray. And like, I have pictures like that they put up on the thing where it's Reggie and Gary at a lacrosse camp with Angela, like, and now they're there. They should reenact that picture. It'd be the funniest thing, you know, like for like senior day, it'd probably be the funniest thing ever. But yeah. So yes, Viviana's doing okay. She works hard and, you know, I love her very much and I only want her to have success.
Well, I think that's how we will end things off. Maybe some commitments in the future. Who knows? Obviously, hopefully Syracuse wins a couple of games this weekend. And who knows? We'll find ourselves, you know, next season talking, I guess, about how Syracuse can maybe defend its 12th title. That would be
sure
nice.
Be nice, wouldn't it?
Yep.
A lot, right. Because there's so much going on in athletics, right, Griff?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, with the new AD and just getting that 7-foot center yesterday, right, from Mexico. And GMAC being, I love the fact a Syracuse guy. I mean, I do. And Hop's one of my boys, too. So, like, I wish it was Hop also on that staff. But it's great for the program. But, yep, I appreciate your time. It's always great to be on my favorite podcast in the world, folks. If you're not listening to this one, you're not listening to anything.
Well, I guess I don't really have to tag out. Thank you, Rick, for taking the time. I appreciate it as always. Thank you to Rick Beardsley for taking the time. As always, one of our favorite guests we get. Always some good nuggets, stories, funny stuff. You never know if he's going to say something that, you know, we'll have to bleep out or he'll get a good chuckle. I know I got some good chuckles from Rick there during that interview. Syracuse again taking on Notre Dame championship weekend on Saturday. That game, 2:30, 2 o'clock, McClure Remodeling countdown face-off, double overtime with me up until 6:30. Let's do some predictions. I think we were pretty spot on for that North Carolina.
I had a two-goal win. I had a two-goal win, 11-9. So I had the two-goal win, right?
It's not bad. I honestly, I have no idea what I predicted, but I think I predicted a Syracuse win. Now that I'm thinking about it, I might have been spot on. I don't know. Well, I'll listen back and
you'll have to go back. Yeah,
I'll have to go back and listen. But what are you thinking? Does Syracuse advance back to the national championship?
Yeah, something I hope I'm wrong in saying, but I don't know. I just feel like this might be just one step too high. I mean, they almost beat him on the road. So, like, part of me thinks that this is absolutely a winnable game, and it is. It'll be a close game, but Man, I just feel like they've played too perfect almost. Like you saw the way they started the Yale game and just how good they've been at faceoffs when they've needed to be. It just feels like we're due for a letdown, and I don't want it to be true because I really think that it's a year of destiny, but I am going to have to take Notre Dame. I think they'll get a one goal win. I'll go 12-11 Notre Dame. I think it's definitely a chance that they win the national championship, and I hope I'm wrong, but man, I just feel like the way Notre Dame played last week against Hopkins, the way they just beat Jacksonville, like they really only struggled with one team this year, and I don't know why, but they've looked so good all year. I think it would be not insane, but I just think Notre Dame is more well-rounded, and I think they showed that in the first matchup. Even if I thought it was kind of a close game, I think Notre Dame gets it done. I'll go Notre Dame by one goal.
Wow, I was not expecting that out of you. I am not gonna take Notre Dame. I'm gonna take Syracuse.
Good.
I think, as Rick said, the most important thing in this game is controlling the middle. And I think Syracuse is gonna do that. I think Joey is gonna, run away with the Toronton and dominate. I think Charlottesville, the people talk about the grass, and Syracuse struggled with the grass at Dorrance Field. I've been at Scott Stadium this season. It's a great atmosphere. The field is definitely grass, and Syracuse playing the second game will definitely have a little bit of a factor there. But I think Syracuse gets it done. I just don't think the story of this season would it will end on Saturday. It doesn't make sense. I'm gonna go a four goal win. I think it's gonna be 15-11.
Wow.
I think Syracuse can run away with it, and I guess that's
Maybe
where
the Mount Sinai, gang returns for a trip to Charlottesville.
potentially I was gonna throw a prediction that Lars would be in the crowd sporting a Syracuse shirt, but that might have been too crazy of a prediction. But that is all we have here on the Ostrom Avenue podcast. It's a long one, so thanks for bearing with us. I think we'll probably hit the hour mark, and we will have another podcast next week breaking it all down. Maybe Syracuse will bring home title number 12. Maybe
Oh.
Syracuse will flame out. Who will know? Only time will tell. Make sure to listen back to that Rick Beardsley interview, maybe a second time, just to get all of Rick's elite knowledge and stories and jokes. Or if you want to listen to previous episodes, you can do so anywhere you get your podcast, or of course at WAER.org for all our Ostrom Avenue podcast content. Make sure to tune in to Saturday's game, 88.3 WAER.org or WAER Sports on Twitter. It'll be a fun one. Syracuse and Notre Dame, obviously, then Monday, the trip to the national championship on the line. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.